Education Center on Mill Road. This meeting is a meeting of the Board of Ed and Public for the purpose of conducting the school district's business and is not to be considered a public community meeting. There is time for public participation during the meeting as an indicated agenda item. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Burnout?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Please,
yes.
Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Item C, approval of agenda addenda items. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Bubbles?
I have none this evening, sir.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Burnout?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Item D, resolution to approve the minutes of the meetings of January 26th and February 9th of 2015. May I have a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion, comment? Roll call, please.
Mrs. Burnout?
Yes.
Mr. Dosen?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Jansen?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Item E, resolution to approve the financial reports of January 2015 and in tab 2. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Brown?
Thank you.
Side, all of those are running favorable, not a lot on the salaries and fringes, but we're under forecast on those. Again, no reason to believe to change any of those. Purchase services, supplies usually gets hit later in the year. The other thing I did in this year's forecast thus far is I didn't show any encumbrances because that seemed to throw us off the forecast in past year. So at the end of the year, we'll probably have $200,000 to $300,000 in encumbered purchase orders that we only leave those out there if they're for specific purchases. We don't leave them out. If somebody puts up an open PO for $10,000 that you don't know what they're buying, those all get closed. So at this point, looking at it, I believe I said last month, I anticipate maybe $200,000 or so favorable variance there. I still would stick with that number. So while the bottom line total shows $704,000 deficit, remember that's for the 7 months of this fiscal year, and the taxes will make up a big piece of that come February. So I feel pretty good about where we are, and no big surprises anticipated.
It's a good way to keep it. Any inclination as to what the weather's doing to us?
I leave that up to the superintendent. It's too early to check and too cold for me, so I leave that up to him.
Where are utilities? Where do utilities fall?
It's in the purchase services line.
Okay.
That's part of why that was more favorable last month. So while it's still favorable, we've got into that a good bit as we go through a harsher winter than we've had before. Anticipate seeing that at least for another month. Our cooperative participation helps us with that because of the group purchasing that they do, and they buy the commodity fuel.
Yeah, I was going to say a harsher winter, but I would assume our gas prices are down from the past.
Yeah, I don't know what they bought at the last time, but they buy the bulk commodity, unless they buy twice a year through the Iowa Schools Council. And I don't recall what the last pricing was, but it would seem like it should have been favorable from a year ago.
Right.
Sure. We've tried looking at those. We keep, I think we have 4 or 5 years of history now of tracking usage and also the MCF pricing on the gas, kilowatt hour pricing on the electricity. So we can see our total payments in a year as well as our utilization, get to a unit cost, and then that helps us project those a little better if you have that harsher winter and your usage would happen pretty well.
Anything else? Roll call, please. On the left. I'm sorry. Roll call, please.
Mrs. Brown?
Yes.
Mr. Dawson?
Yes.
Mrs. Mack?
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler?
Yes.
Mr. Dawson?
Yes. Motion passes 5-0. Item F, other business of the Treasurer, CFO.
We don't have anything else, thank you.
Item G, communications. Mr. Rebels?
Sir, I have a few things for you. First of all, we had a friend. Thank you. A very good start to our winter season athletics. A couple of weeks ago, the Bees wrestling team won the Division I state school tournament. That was in Columbus, Ohio. That has some athletes continuing to participate in state championship, in different championships. But this is the first state championship for our school to score in wrestling. We edged out the pretty power St. Edwards, which is
very nice.
They are an excellent program, and we were able to do that. So congratulations to Coach Haverville and all the wrestlers. We want to also talk about this past weekend, we had numerous swimmers qualify for the states, and our team did quite well in state competition. Last week in Canton, those students also will go into individual state qualifying championships coming up over the next weekend. Wanted to remind everybody that the time has arrived, and that is for the March 13th. When I say time has arrived, we're starting to take reservations for the Bob Evans Turf fundraiser, and the information is being passed out or sent out to teams so that they can go online. They go online, and you can do that also, board members. I'll send you the email so that you can log on, and you can have up to 3 individuals at a particular table, and it's just like a regular restaurant where it's 5 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock, and there's a full day of that. You can attend breakfast, lunch, or dinner. And all of the proceeds from that come back to the school system. So this is a great opportunity for us as a school to raise money towards the turf. Half the money will go to the turf, and the other half will go to the teams, and the parents or whoever is there can tell Bob Evans, at least the administration, which team they would like for their persons to go to. So we really thank Bob Evans for their participation in this, and we're adding some excitement to the turf project. Another interesting thing that's happening is our robotics team. It's part of our STEM programming, not specific to STEM, but obviously STEM is involved. They are doing quite well again, and they're off to the States and have been advanced to the national competition, which is in Kentucky. So the robotics team continues, and at an upcoming board meeting, we're actually going to have the robotics team bring their things that they put together, the robots, and the things that they do, and they're going to show them to us. And so that'll be kind of cool to have that. So robotics did quite well. And also the academic challenge team completed at the WEWS News Channel 5 studio against Wadsworth High School and Perry Maslin High School. After very close scores in the second round, these maintained their lead. And at the end of five rounds, won decisively with a total of 615 points. And those kids continue to go on in their competition. And the match will air, for those of you who are interested, on Saturday, April 18th, 2015, you'll see our kids on television. So a lot of good things happening right now in addition to the fun that we're having with weather.
So you sent out a reminder for that TV?
Oh, yes,
Mrs. Harbinack.
We do that. Supposed to keep it a secret that our kids
right, are. Right. But that'd be nice. Well, we can all share it on Facebook.
Yes, Channel 5 asked us to do that.
Well, that was nice.
So we haven't had anything. No, I'm swearing you now. Because we know the outcome already.
Right.
So.
Oh, my God, my bet we can't.
That's exactly what you should do.
I have nothing in my email that says I shouldn't say that.
This
didn't come from you.
No, it did not come from me. When we heard from the high school teacher, I did not ask exactly what was supposed to be kept of the outcome secret. And she
tried to lost miserably.
It's not going to be a secret. She told my wife.
Secret in breakfast.
I'm going to defend that woman's honor. Enough of that.
Speaking of communications.
We could use it as a fundraiser to our benefit. So just think of the possibilities and you know the outcome.
Exciting news. So,
It is.
I have a feeling that most people will know to watch.
Oh, yeah. Well, we will send things out, Mrs. Mack.
Thank you. So we can share. Thank you.
Now, the next two communication items, although the ones that we just mentioned are certainly very serious, and we congratulate all the coaches, the participants, and their families. Rick and I had the opportunity to meet this past Friday with Senator Patton and 13 other superintendents from Northeast Ohio, as well as treasurers. During our time at that meeting, we emphasized our displeasure with some of the assessment things that are happening in the state of Ohio and how that's impacting our school district. And we also talked to Senator Patton about the economics of the potential economics of the governor's proposed budget. And on behalf of Senator Patton, who obviously is not here tonight, both Rick and I left the meeting very encouraged by his receptiveness, by his willingness to talk, to take notes, and to listen. He had us on speakerphone with individuals who work with him in Columbus and who also provide information to other senators out of other senators' offices. And he had a specialist with him that was a budgetary analyst who also took notes, copious notes, on what school districts had to say about the finances. And many of the school districts represented in that room are on the list, as we are, of the 10 biggest losers in the state of Ohio. So it was a candid conversation. And again, I wanted to thank, on behalf of the board, we did thank Senator Patton for his willingness to listen. And he did say that he was not in favor of some of the things that were happening to local school districts. He also had some concerns about assessment and said that he would take the message back. And continuing this conversation with us on that day. Out of that, though, did come a lot of conversation about the opt-out discussion that's happening across the state of Ohio right now. And we have had officially two documents presented to us. The second one delivered to us today, where a parent at one of our elementaries is suggesting or saying that her child will not participate in the assessments that are happening at the elementary. We passed out a couple of weeks ago to our administrators information on student participation in state tests. At that particular time, we encouraged our administrators to have individual and personal conversations with parents who brought concerns to them about testing. Because this document that comes from us from the Ohio Department of Education suggests that federal and state law, while it doesn't suggest, federal and state laws require all districts and schools to test all students in specific grades and courses. There is no law that allows a parent or student to opt out of state testing, and there is no state test opt-out procedure or form. So forms that are being presented to school districts are not official forms from the Ohio Department of Education or from the Ohio Legislature. There are forms that have been crafted by lobbyist groups who are using terminology that is provided within government documents to present that to schools, and the term that they are using is safe harbor for tests. However, that is not a state, that is not an official state or legislative document, nor is it an official Ohio Department of Education document. We've asked our principals to talk to parents about the realities of testing and assessment and accountability and how it impacts a child if, for example, they don't take the third grade test, how that may impact them not being able to go to fourth grade because they will not have a test that suggests that they are past the third grade reading guarantee. At the high school, if they come to a school before July 2014 as a freshman and they do not take the Ohio graduation test, it's very possible that we will not be able to distribute them a diploma. If they come after July 1st, 2014 as a freshman, which would be this year, there are common assessments, year-end assessments that they have to take. If they don't take those, they also may not be able to be eligible for earning a high school diploma. And students who are English language learners who don't take the OTELA test, which is the Ohio Test of English Language Acquisition, may not be able to exit the English as a Second Language program. And we are having these conversations with parents, and obviously, as in all situations, the parent has the final responsibility to make that decision. We are hoping that and encouraging parents to go ahead and allow their students to take the test so that we can receive information on how well their child is doing, so we can receive information on how well our school is doing against other metrics in the state and other schools in the state, and so that we are in compliance with federal laws and that our EMIS reports that are related to funding in the state of Ohio are accurate and that we can maintain a good relationship with the Ohio Department of Education. Having said that is the law as it stands right now. We are a compliance part of the Ohio Department of Education, and we are asking that parents follow through. Parents have the absolute final option. But as a part of this, so that board members know and our community knows, we were in a meeting with Senator Peck to discuss the things that we believe are not appropriate for children as far as assessments are concerned in the state of Ohio. And so this Wednesday, this week, there is a Senate hearing. I will be participating in the Senate Bill 3, and I will be testifying on behalf of our students in Northeast Ohio, along with five other superintendents across the state of Ohio, to discuss Senate Bill 3, which provides less regulation to school districts regarding assessment. And so I'm crafting a message. Dr. Simsek is helping me with that. Dr. Palabek is also, so that the terminology that I use and the information that I present is accurate and is factual, not only about testing and assessments, but about how that impacts our school district. So Senate Bill 3, and I can pass that around, not to take too much time to see it, provides relief for school districts assessments that are statewide right now that we might be exempt from because we are a high-performing school district. There are other legislative opportunities within that for school districts that are like ours to have less licensure requirements for teachers. There's also some information in there about the Ohio Schools Facilities Commission, that school districts like ours, who are high-performing school districts, who will never receive the Ohio School Facilities Commission money because we're so low on the list. They have an opportunity to have a one-time payment of dollars to us as PI dollars so that we could use those dollars as opposed to having to wait maybe for the next 30 to 40 years until I fill this pool because we moved up the list. There's things like that in there. And there are some other items that are important. So I'll be testifying this Wednesday on behalf of our school district, and I'm going to pass this around so you can kind of take a look at that if you would like to. The other part of Senator Patton's meeting had to do with the state budget, and I am passing around for board members a press release that was put together that we will distribute tomorrow after tonight's meeting. We'll take another look at it between this meeting and the executive session for tonight to make sure that the language in there is exactly what board members would like to have. But I thank all of you participating in the process to create this document and to make sure that our points of emphasis are clearly articulated. And so we have a press release in front of you, which we'll pull out tomorrow, when that talks about the influence of the governor's proposed budget on our school district, which happens to be a loss of $3.9 million in the next 2 years and $2.6 million every year after that. So those two items, I want to give you a page on that myself, and I will be able to thank Rick for going for the meeting with me last Friday. And hopefully on Wednesday, we are able to influence the Senate hearing to put into law or take to the next level deregulation, if you will, for school districts who perform well in the state of Ohio, as well as eliminating some assessments, diagnostic assessments in the state of Ohio that we believe are well beyond what is required and what we should be doing in our school system. So, there you go. Those are two things that you want to do.
Just a quick question on these opt-out forms. There's some parts of the state that have, you know, say we have two, but they have like percentages of students being turned in that way, don't they? Like 20% or more.
In the Cincinnati area, there is a high volume of opt-out documentations being presented to school districts. It's a little bit less in the center of the state, but it is there. And over the last couple of weeks, as we've gotten closer to the testing window, more and more parents. And in the meeting that Rick and I attended on Friday, we had heard numbers as high as 6% of the students in a particular school district in Northeast Ohio, which performs quite well on the state report card of our experiencing. About 6% of their students and parents have sending this particular document for it, which will one like it.
This is a car crash. Very to happen, isn't it?
Well, I was one of the things.
We're not, gonna, you know, like on the bumper of a car in our position, but I mean, this is going to be, I think this is the state's going to deal with now. It's going to be awfully quickly, right?
Yes. The information that we learned from our meeting on Friday, this is a general statement, is that the students who are opting out will most likely be the students who perform very well on the tests. The general conclusion was that the parents are very educationally oriented, are well-read on the subject, and have determined that for their children, these assessments are beyond what they think is appropriate. That's what the general statement was in that. In other places in the state, that's not necessarily as accurate of the state. So what we talked about at that meeting and a point that we brought up is now that there is is so much fluctuation, when there is so little opportunity for 100% of schools in the state of Ohio, or at least as close to 100 as there has been in the past, don't have data that reflects their full student population, that will skew the results statewide, which in fact makes the state report card null and void. And that's the car crash that you're talking about, which is including the park testing part of it, which includes teacher evaluation, which includes all the work that Bonnie, myself, our committee, our teachers have been involved in this year, as well as other teachers across the entire state. All of this retooling, all of this movement and energy towards this could all be for naught in less than 3 months. So we'll see.
It's unenforceable. Because the school has the opt-out, what are you going to force the parents? So you can't. So you just say they opted out. So
but then you have
what are you going
to
do?
The basis under which you do some other things, obviously. If, I mean,
some, but not the park. I mean, it's not really holding you to anything. Not like he said, English, you know, we're graduating. It doesn't really hold you to the next grade. It doesn't.
There was an audit.
Sorry.
There was an audit recommendation from a couple of superintendents that if the child's test was opt-out, then you could pull those kids and still have 100% of the kids that took the test. However, just the other side of that conversation was, just because a student says, I'm opting out and I didn't turn my test in, doesn't mean, and we've heard about this, just fill your name in and sit. So they didn't opt out, but they didn't take it seriously. And so you have, I'll just mark every C. And therein lies the train wreck, the car wreck, the plane wreck, whatever.
Well, as we saw in Atlanta, it doesn't take too long for school districts or individuals to figure out, there's certain segments of my student body that I prefer not to take the test because it's going to influence me the other way. And you hand out the opt-out things to those kids.
Or you just change their grade.
It would be easy to try it.
Because the conversation has happened in among board members, myself, and individual conversations either by email or by telephone, I think it is important for our parents and community to know that the position that I have taken as a superintendent is that we will follow the law in the state of Ohio. And like all laws, the parents have, in regard to education, the last right to refuse or have the obligation to be responsible for decisions that they make about their children, whether it's attendance, academics, or what it might be, discipline. We work with parents. They are the final arbitrator, if you will. And so collectively or globally as a school system, we are following through. We have done everything over the past few years to get ourselves prepared for all the assessments. We've altered our curriculum to the new standards. We have all of our teachers working on pacing guides and curriculum and instruction. So we have moved our organization towards this, and we believe that our students are well prepared, well beyond prepared, because of our staff. I believe now the logistics of testing and the logistics of new curriculum, we've always done well against those things. So against the field, I think our children will do very well.
I guess against the field, I think they have to do that math, but to get the math packet for Park, I mean,
I think it's going to be real interesting to see how they do, because, and this is the first time it's given, so it's the first time we're going to really have some raw data, but, you know, from what I've heard about it, number one, it's probably because it's on the computer, you know, a lot of kids aren't going to have, especially the younger ones, maybe aren't going to have the technological skills to be able to be testing that more than the actual content, and then I read something recently about readability, and that even the way the questions are presented, that, you know, because educators had so little to do with actually making the criteria, I mean, the readability is above the grade level of the kids that are taking the test. So you're right. I think against other districts and other a lot of other districts, our kids will do well, but it's going to be real interesting to see what we find out with that first run.
It's going to be an iterative, first run. It's going to be an iterative process. I mean, other states, when they've done testing, all of a sudden, student scores will drop through the floorboards. Do they get dumber? No. It's just a different standard, and it takes time.
I have a question about the bills, Senate bills. For the licensure for deregulation, is gifted in there for not having to?
Bill exempts not
because I know there's a bit of a
context. Several requirements of current law, including provisions related to teacher qualifications under the third grade reading guarantee.
Okay.
Teacher licensing, mentoring under the Ohio Teacher Residency Program, and class size restrictions.
Okay.
And there are more details.
But nothing about.
I didn't see anything specific to gifted.
Just want to make sure it's not lumped in that situation.
Well, some of the superintendents across the state. Circumstances in core areas where they have identified a person they would like their students report for performing quite well. That certification is a change in the State Department of Education relative to legislation. They want to have the opportunity to maybe hire someone that they believe can do that at a high level as opposed to having to go through the licensure program and potentially putting a lesser qualified teacher who has a certification in front of kids. So the deregulation more local control over who's in front of the kids in particular classroom settings. Now, obviously, in the local negotiation processes, that would be something that we need to take a closer look at against the local language, but it's offering more opportunities for flexibility and local control decisions in some of these areas. Now, for us, they're saying that you can take away the diagnostic testing for math and English and language arts in grades 1, 2, and 3. We're never going to do that here.
Right.
Because we're all about response to intervention. That's what the board has set the course on, the strategic vision, that we want a quality response to intervention program, which leads to quality intervention. And it also, and our assessments that we have in place right now, provide our teachers daily, weekly information. And we do it a benchmark with our STAR, Dibbles testing across the year. So we are checking the data as the year goes. And as we've always said, we don't want to have to wait until the end of the year to have a sense of where our kids are. We want to do that regularly across the school year from benchmark assessments that we have in place that inform our teachers about how well our students are doing. Not only how well our students are doing, how well our interventions are doing, and how well our program is doing relative to our kids and their performance across the school year. So we're not going to probably stop that. However, we might want to say we're not necessarily sure we want to use the state's test for this. We have one that we believe works for us and we think is a better circumstance for our kids in our location at this particular point in time. And we have years of quality educational performance to suggest that we believe what we're doing for our kids is working. We want to put that in the hands of our teachers and our professionals who are on site as opposed to a legislative bill that comes to us from Columbus. I'm not suggesting that those bills are done with malice or intent to harm. I'm suggesting that this is Max's classroom. She better knows what to do with her children than I do from my seat in the superintendent's office or than Senator does in Columbus. And so we want that local control for our teachers.
Just a point for the opt-out. This was an interesting thing for my own parents. Some parents think that when we're giving the test, this is in my own district, that they're missing direct instruction. So they think that their kids are going to be getting direct instructions because of the. They said they've been out of school so long with the snow days. I want them to get instruction and not miss that. And I said, no, that's not what's going to be happening at all when we're giving that PARC test. So I don't know if that's being perpetuated somewhere, you know.
The one positive thing, the teacher is going to go away. If the student opts out, the teacher will not be seeing that student not participating. That will be a did not attempt, and that student is removed from the teacher's data.
Interesting.
So the district index because we get a zero for that child. The participation rate, that child did not participate, but the teacher will be held harmless.
So the child does the opt-out.
Yes.
But if they put their name on the paper and they stop the exam, or they
submit, and if they do the first one and submit, that would be impossible.
This is an odd question. Can an 18-year-old opt out on their own?
An adult?
As a matter of fact, one of my seniors in the first period class said, I'm 18. Who I have to talk to see what I can speak to for myself and my choices. And I made an assignment down to talk with the assistant principal. But this is a student. Second semester seniors are an interesting thing for the baby. Especially for high school tests.
Cases by counsel to the principal would be as soon as they come down, contact their parent, have them come in, have a conference with the three of you, and decide how this is going to be moved to that place. Even though they have the right, we always want to include the parent in that conversation. And oftentimes there's something beyond instruction in the classroom that's impacting that child to make that student to make that decision. We just want to work that out. If it's determined that the student has the right, and the parent says that, you can do that. We always want to have that conversation with the parents.
So are you filing these opt-out letters somewhere? So when the state, is there any accountability here?
I have two of them. The first one was pulled back by the parent.
Okay.
They had a conversation with the principal, and these conversations are not, we're not coercing people to make their children do anything. We're going through the document.
You're educated.
In this particular case, the parent was not informed at the level that they needed to be and made the decision themselves. Oh, if that's the case, my child will participate. I think the one that came to us today will be a different conversation, and it could be our first legitimate.
So you're going to file it, and do you just have to send it to the state? Or
we will keep that information. I will certainly make sure that Dr. Kalovic has it. We'll certainly make sure that we notify the High Department of Education. We have an official, unofficial form.
Is that it?
And we will make sure that they're aware that that student.
Okay.
Was there a consensus amongst the participants in the discussion as to what the motivation for this rash of opt-out was? Is it political? Is it something else?
I can't say for sure.
Okay.
You got it. I think people pull from a lot of different perceptions to make a decision.
On the topic of the budget, I also had the chance to speak with State Senator LaRose, who's not our senator, but he similarly has been getting some feedback from his district and just simply mentioned that the budget is a proposal.
On that same topic, if memory serves me correct, is the budget process, does that have to be done by June 30th?
Yes.
Correct. Okay. So there's a lot of runway left.
Well, what Senator Patton talked to us about the other day was that the House keeps it for a really long time, and then the Senate gets it in May. So there's not as much runway once it gets to the Senate. Now, obviously, they're watching and talking back and forth, so there's a sense of what's coming. But their window of time is 1 month, opposed to the House, who has this for a long period.
So they don't do their own and then compromise them. So the Senate just whatever the House throws over the wall, they have.
And then June it goes to the Joint Committee as necessary.
That's the process. Okay.
Yeah. And then it goes to the governor who has
veto or whatever.
Certainly.
Stay tuned.
But he has to have something, right? So he has to have something by what date?
June 30th.
June 30th. Sorry.
Okay. Well, happy number part. We want to put our students first because that is the happy. And the other things are part and parcel to public education, and we maintain positive attitude towards those things. We do see some relief coming in Senate Bill 3 that we've been asking for, so that is positive. And the second part is we had a positive audience with
we believe to be a well-respected senator in the state of Ohio. And we'll also be talking with Marlee Danielski and others on this topic. So there's some positive.
And just to kind of throw that in, I've sent you guys an email. That could ultimately lead to a very good audience with the guy who has the line item veto.
Mr. Ziegler has reached out and has written a very nice letter on behalf of all of our schools. So that's yet another. We're all doing our part where we can, when we can. So keep doing that.
Does anybody wish to address the board this evening? It just allows me to dispense with reading the whole paragraph.
Yeah, really.
Nobody?
These are guests from the University of Akron.
Welcome.
Future teachers.
Thanks for joining us.
They'll be future educators before we know it.
Fantastic. What year of study are you all in?
I'm a sophomore.
I'm a junior.
Excellent. Going well? Thanks for joining us this evening. You sure you don't have anything for us?
One is our own alumni.
Congrats.
Graduated with Val.
With Val? Excellent. Can we tell you anything tonight?
This opt-out thing is pretty interesting. I didn't realize how, you said it's a slippery slope.
Very good. Let's move on to item I then. Administrative reports and discussions.
Yes. Members of the board, you have a document in front of you that looks like this. It is, in fact, your report. This is Montalino, and I will be speaking to you about the plan calls for a report to the Board of Education about mid-year to let you know where we are in the process. And so the goal, as you see it, is to implement an instructional schedule to meet student learning needs, inclusive of employee workday parameters to maximize expertise and efficiency. So, in June, when Mrs. Montalino and I approached, she provided us with the opportunity for the lease period. I'm going to say Bonnie, respectfully, Bonnie, and to work together. We think that we have been able to accomplish a few of the things that you expected, and there were a few things we started out with. First of all, we wanted to have after negotiations, the last negotiations, you were part of it. It was a process that required concessions on both sides of the fence. After those concessions had happened and we started into the process of getting back to education, we also wanted to make sure that the relationship moving forward is a positive one. It leads to future negotiations that are positive and that influence our students in an appropriate way. So your foresight there is appreciated. And so Bonnie and I began our work to develop that relationship, to communicate back and forth, to make sure that similar to the trust that has been built in the public by the board's actions is built among our staff, by the superintendent, and Bonnie's actions together as we work. So that was a major part of our work together. The second part was to develop a committee. We wanted to make sure that we had the voice of our teachers involved. The committee is responsible. They all work with Bonnie and myself, and they are representatives from every building. They're responsible to work together and try to accomplish the goal we set before you, to inform the staff in their meetings about what's happening in our committee, to involve the staff in participation some of the things we'd like to move forward with, and provide feedback to the staff about how things are going, not only at the board level, the administrative level, but at that committee's level in regard to the things we're trying to accomplish. Again, we want to have staff. We want our staff involved. We want that voice in every recommendation that comes before the Board of Education. And also, the Board of Education, when you agreed to this plan, you also took on a responsibility. That was to move forward on a strategic vision that you for evenings like tonight and other evenings where we've met and we reported to you about how well this process is going. So those were the major things that we wanted to try to accomplish at the beginning of the year. And there are some things that have happened
just got, I don't know, we have the same document. We've got a different goal.
Oh, this.
Sorry about that. This one should say the analysis action.
Yeah, well, this is having Gina.
This was unprofessional.
No, we haven't. It was not.
We just have file.
Yeah. So glad you said that.
I was reading. This does not sound like.
By the way, the debate team didn't meet either, so. I mean, all on the same day now.
Yes.
I'm sorry, yeah.
I'm ready for this.
Okay.
Okay, so.
And item three, Sarah, we're gonna take it.
All right, so with building level priorities. In our meetings that took us well into the summer, what we worked with our team, first of all, we need to avoid assumptions, which meant we really had dialogue, we had surveys, we wanted to know and make sure that we understood it. When we tackled the calendar process, if you've ever been with the elementary teachers, you understand what August means to them. But we did find strong support for changing when we start to start earlier in August. However, the high school would start us in the first week of August. However, there is recognition that we have unair-conditioned buildings and so on, and that's a major factor. But it was interesting to get our own teachers on board with what a day of instruction means and how important it is for us to have days of instruction before high stakes testing. Now, Scott and I went out, and we went into each of the buildings, and we met with the staff because we wanted them to see us together, working together. It is an understatement to say that it was a challenge coming out of the last negotiations, and we have now our fourth HR director for me. I went from Mark Robinson to Kathy Powers to Rich Evans, and now I have Ryan Wyckoff, who I'm fortunate to work with. But it was important for our staff to see that Scott and I were working closely together and that this dialogue, it is real and it's meaningful. So we went out. Worked with the committee on a full staff survey, which brought back for 15-16, looking forward, what could be immediate efficiencies or changes, and what are things that are going to cost something that are probably more likely to be part and parcel to negotiations. Many of the things that are on my list are things we've actually already shared with the board, and I was here for one of the workshop sessions, the other one I listened to from home. It's not nearly as much fun. But the preschool and elementary schedule alignment that came out of the committee saying, hey, can we have an efficiency with the busing component? But also, we have greater access to the staff, and that was an important piece. The kindergarten schedule with the scholarship option. Out of the surveys, we had kindergarten teachers and others say, we need contact 5 days. This 2.5-day model is not working like we think it should, and we could hear it from different grade levels. The elementary media center technology integration model was really interesting to watch because I had elementary teachers who were arriving at this realization of what they really need, while at the same time we have another part of the equation that is working on this, and they arrive at the same point. So it's not like someone said, here, this is what you need. Instead, we had this committee help the teachers have the realization, this is what we need to have, how do we get the professional development to fit in, and now that's part of our next step. The earlier elementary start time and the later high school start. It was very clear that the elementary teachers want the children earlier in the day, and the high school teachers would like the students to be a little better rested. And we, again, in the next step of where things go, we have to look at the transportation piece and the reality of that, but our teachers were articulating what the issues were that they were facing, and again, they felt validated. Now, the PLC collaboration time, what came out of the survey is that what we do isn't what we've done in the past. What we do now with data, what we have to do now with the standards, the expectation of expertise from a new teacher through someone who's been doing it for 30 years, having everybody on the same page and working to the same common goal. So it's easy as it looks. And having the opportunity to meaningfully work with the people you need, that is a big challenge because we really haven't had that kind of coordinated time before. And so that was a piece that came out of it. so with all of that gathered, then the next step, of course, became, what do we do with it? And jump in here. So says, you kind of tell me where to stop on this one. So then you get to item four.
Oh, this is?
Yes.
So Bonnie was able to articulate what came out of the survey and the types of things we've been working on up to this point. The next items that follow up the chart you see kind of happening in here. So we were developing mock schedules, which is the fourth block. We were working on the transportation adjustments, and that's the fifth block. Staffing assignments, licensure, and compensation analysis, that's all happening now in the HR department regarding some of the plans that we've already brought up for education. And obviously, in block seven, there's budget analysis. So the preschool and kindergarten transportation recommendations have been approved by the Board of Education. We know that there is a savings there in one particular part of that equation, and there is a cost associated with that. We know that the full-day kindergarten assessment model that has been created or will be created in coordination with teachers. So not only do we have the full-day component for kindergarten in place for those children who have difficulties with literacy, we also have teachers involved in the development of a series of assessments that they have identified to help those children along the way so we can better identify the kids and provide them with the services that are necessary. We had an analysis, as Bonnie talked about, the current school day, the current work day, probably more importantly, the school day for students doesn't necessarily accommodate us making that adjustment in our transportation. This is something that truly is going to have to make its way into the negotiating process because we're going to need to break things down. We have the capacity or the capability now to get our students to school on time and be able to work through that schedule. But because the schedules for student time and classes vary at each building, the instructional day for students varies. Those windows close in the second half of the day, and we can't get those kids back home. So we're going to have to take a closer look at that. That's part of what we'll talk about in a few minutes. The instructional technology model, inclusive the teacher support, media center staffing, and one-on-one hardware development or deployment in grade six, that's in place. The Board of Education has moved forward with that. We're working through a lot of things with that particular model, and we'll talk about those in a few minutes. The ELC time MOU, we talk about that not only exploratory committee, but we also talk about that in our shared solutions committee, what that looks like, how we get teachers together as well as other staff members to talk about that PLC. And when you talk about that PLC and the necessity to coordinate teachers so that they are in the same place at the same time, whether they're paired teachers working in a particular curriculum, whether they're grade level teachers, whether they're a department, an entire department at the high school, that really influences that schedule piece, and that's something that we're going to have to work on as time goes along. We are at the high school taking a very close look right now at what we know about our math program. Our teachers have said that there's not enough time with the new curriculum we have in our math department for a certain group of our students. And so they're working with the science department to come up with a hybrid block schedule system that offers 60 minutes of instructional time for students. Which also offers 60 minutes of time for students in science. And so what we have been doing well in our science department, we're trying to coordinate those two departments now in the middle of the day and with other departments to assure that a segment of our student body has 60-minute blocks of time. Now, when you do that with students, you have to recognize that in high school it offers maybe 15,000 options when you think about all the things that are available across the period day that we have. That takes some time, so our teachers are working on that. It's very positive work that has come out of this committee. We're doing an analysis right now, and you received this information in a recent flyer from me about the one-to-one initiative that we have going on. What we're doing right now is taking a look at the technology standards, the National Technology Standards, and sort of laying those over top of what we're doing at each of our grade levels and getting a clearer idea about what specific technology and instructional skills not only should we have for our students in classrooms, but also the professional development that is aligned with that for our teachers to be able to
make those things happen, as well as work that Dr. Simsek has put together on professional development for special needs teachers who have aids assigned to them and some of the technology integration. So it just, the onion continues to unfold in that particular area. As we look into remaining implementation items on the backside of the piece of paper, we're really starting to get into the logistics of all this. On March 27th, we do want to, Bunny and I want to be back in front of the entire staff to talk about where we've been, where we are, and what we're trying to accomplish. That will happen on March 27th. We also want to take that communication not only to our staff, we want to take that to students and parents regarding what's happening with many of the things that we're doing from preschool all the way through the one-to-one technology into some of the things we're doing in high school with the instructional day. On the staffing side of things right now, I can assure you that with retirements, with resignations, with certifications, there is quite a bit that's happening on the flow chart, if you will, in regards to not only the new things that we're moving forward that have come up this committee with board approval, but with things that naturally happen at this particular time of the school year. So all of those things are happening. There are logistics that we're working on right now with our facilities, with the preschool, with the kindergarten, location and buildings. If locations change, licensure issues come up. If licensure issues come up, it extends the timing that is required to do some of these things. And not only the facilities, but the materials that are necessary for people to do the things that they need to do. The media center specialists that we're putting into place, they're meeting and having professional development opportunities, as well as the media assistants. And part of the board's policy, we are posting the media specialist position to make sure that we have the person on board so we have all three of them together doing some of the planning that is necessary. Also with logistics, there's the entire equipment side of things, the selection of the equipment, to mention Wi-Fi in all of our buildings to make sure that we can, in fact, do what we say that we need to do with regard to our technology and our new plans. Policies and procedures, that's a significant part of the work that needs to be taken care of over the next few months in regard to the things that we're doing, because we are changing the way that we do things in our schools. We are expecting students to act differently or to learn differently, and we're expecting teachers to do things differently, as well as parents having knowledge of what those things are, signing off on agreements and having accountability themselves for this process. And all of that communication needs to happen. Not only the policy, but the procedures associated with that, and all the guidelines that need to be done, and all the student handbooks that need to be altered. It's a big process to make sure all of this works. And then board education involvement, like tonight, we continue to bring this information to you. We continue to bring different iterations to you, different ideas, and you have been listening. We believe that you're informed, and we believe that we're getting good guidance from you in the next step to take, or the next directive to move forward with our plan. So those are the things that are happening right now, and they're very important. They are the sort of putting the rubber or the tire on the road now. We've sort of had the committee do its survey. They've come up with the ideas. They've brought them to the Board of Education. We've gotten approval to move forward. Now we need to go back and fill in all of the blanks, make sure that everything fits together before we take this on next year in all of these places. So what happens next? Bonnie and I are going to be meeting with the individual, with the executive, the exploratory schedule committee, and we're going to be going over what individual buildings are doing to make sure that these things are moving forward. You all are aware of continuous improvement plans. We presented them to the board and you will review them. That's what we're doing in the building level now. These things will happening in the building. What does your plan look like? What are the benchmarks? What are the timelines? Who are the people involved? And can you show us that things are moving forward? It's not only the committee's responsibility, but it's the principal's responsibility along with the staff members. Teacher evaluation mandates that Bonnie talked about a little earlier, and we did as we were talking about some of the communication. Mr. Ziegler said it's sort of a, it's not necessarily a car accident, but there are so many moving parts with all of the things that have been required up to this point, with the way teachers are evaluated, the way performance data is being used, the way that core curriculum teachers are being evaluated, value-added data, all the teachers who have SLOs, that all is very fluid right another budget line item may be moving. And so off to the drawing board we go again. So this position or this time that you have to prove as a board is being used. And sometimes it's very difficult to document on a benchmark analysis, but it certainly is helping with the conversations in our building with individual staff members that Bonnie has an opportunity to be involved in. That information is coming to me, a very genuine conversation. And it also is going in the other direction where we're getting information from the state, from the Board of Education, and Bonnie and I talk about that, and how are we going to convey that to our principals? How are we going to convey that to our teachers, our parents, and others? So we're working together on very fluid information, and I think it's working out pretty well right now. We are collaboratively resolving conflict before it becomes conflict. You can't stop it all. There are certain things that it is what it is, and we aren't wrestling once a month now instead of twice. But
we don't have the snowball.
Right. We don't have that.
It used to be a things piled up for a month, and then we would meet right around the board meeting time, and it was difficult. It was difficult not to have things snowball. But now, there's no chance.
And
this is the right part.
The insurance committee, Bonnie's work with the insurance committee, Rick and myself, and all the things that are happening to try to put options together so when we get to the negotiation process, not only the options are available, but the staff is informed. The staff is educated about the possibilities. The staff has been involved and has more ability to provide information to Bonnie that is specific to themselves, and also a recognition by the individual about how they fit in the full process. So that's pretty important when you're thinking about insurance models and options. And probably the most important in all of this is there is a higher reliance on data that is similar data. What I mean by that is when we're sitting in an insurance committee and we're all looking at the same document, when Bonnie leaves the room, the document is the document. There aren't two different analyses of what's going on. There is Mr. Burdine, along with the consultant, along with Tommy, little from the superintendent, but nonetheless, there's an understanding of what's on the piece of paper. That helps tremendously. That same understanding exists with this model that we're talking about, but I can tell you, factual information that comes out of Mr. Burdine's committee and Bonnie's committee on the insurance side is very sequential. There are opinions about it, and there are nuances about it that can fluctuate. Much of what Bonnie and I presented tonight is very emotional. It's very passionate conversations about education, about children, about what's best for them. And it is a slower moving train. And we've accomplished a lot this year, in addition to the board work plans. And I'm looking forward to the work with our teachers, Bonnie, myself, our principals, come up with additional options that are more global, if you will, when we get closer to the negotiation process about schedules, about teacher work, about student work day, about some language that we currently have in our contract that is difficult for teachers, is difficult for administrators, and is ultimately difficult for students. So those are the types of things that we're going to try to work on as we go through the next few months and into the next year.
Does help the membership to understand options and responsible these things mean. So that piece with Rick and working through it. And I believe our next step is we were getting some more specific data, and then we would be looking at surveying. But we're being very careful in both of these committees about not negotiating. We're not violating the guidelines. And that is sometimes a challenge. But I think that it's important for us to do this piece. I also want to say that our teachers are highly motivated individuals. And this teacher evaluation piece has proven to be they're building the plane while we're flying it. And it is very unnerving for them when they have something that is a tool that they thought would deliver data, and then it turns out to not do what it said it did, and they have to suddenly switch gears. We're talking about documenting the learning in their classrooms, and they're very, very conscientious about this. And so they're extremely uncomfortable at the accuracy about data. And so working through holding people's hands, and I can tell you that because of this time, I have felt compelled to be in touch with either Scott or Brian as issues arise. And Brian can probably tell you, I don't think out of 5 days in a week, we're in contact 4 out of 5. And because a question comes up, and it is an expectation that we address it on the spot, that we handle this. And I've actually, again, having a new HR person to work with, you have to get to know people's style, how you read a contract, and the opportunity you have afforded me this year has made this really the most positive year, even though it is a frightening year with all of the alphabet soup of OTEs and SLOs and everything else. You have given us the opportunity to take a really best practice forward, and I value that. I think my colleagues understand that. I'm hoping that my colleagues will embrace the scheduling piece of this more as a priority, but I can honestly say the OTEs and the SLO and the data piece has been a real stress for the teachers. And getting them to look at, well, if you could change the day, what would you have it be? They're looking at me going, Daddy, I can't think about that right now. We're getting them to now think, because I recognize there are things we can't put in place because of the language parameters for next year, but there are pieces that should be appropriately bargained. We're both marking our contracts with language that is challenging, that should get addressed. And I think that this process will have teachers understanding why we may want to make trade-offs in certain areas, but we're not using that kind of negotiation language at this time of the meeting of our grade. Fair enough?
Just no.
Okay.
Questions?
That's the last piece.
Bonnie, we have an SLO committee that...
Yes, we do.
How does that go? What is that made up of?
So to describe it to you, we invited individuals who would, within their departments, be writing SLOs. So we had representatives out of elementary, middle school, and high school. We brought teachers and administrators together. We paired the teachers and administrators so that as we read submissions from teachers, we had a mix looking at them, and we had a rubric. Went through the rubric, and where we had questions, we then sent it back to the teacher and asked for clarification or revision. And we went through our first series, then we had to go back and have a second series, and we still have a few more that we're working out. And part of it is, this is not easy stuff to define. How will you get your benchmark data that will be the informed trend line? If you've never tested the kid before, how can you have a trend? Looking at what is appropriate for an age or a classroom situation. You have a classroom that is cross-categorical, multi-handicap, and you're working on standards. How do you list those standards? You're not going to list the General Education Common Core, but there are extended standards that should be there. So we had to align the people applying the rubric, and then communicate with our own staff. What we learned is that we have to have more training at certain levels and areas, and we also learned that we need help at developing these post-assessment pieces, what they look like. The teacher's working with the data. How do I know that my data is good data? How do I know that this describes what I thought it would describe? These are really good questions. Unfortunately, our ratings are tied to my building. The integrity of my colleagues, and that is a problem to certain degree because I have people who are honestly doing the best they can with the limited information they've received and the changing information, and it has left them feeling, if you could talk to my English department, they were so frustrated at different pieces and parts, but they are passionately working towards creating quality measures. March 27th, there are some groups that will be working on the database and understanding it. And these are good people who are trying to basically learn what they need to do. But Brian has been instrumental with the SLO committee because Brian has done this before. And I like when we have people who have expertise and knowledge, let's listen to them and get their perspective and see how can we bring that in. So that's one point.
So from the scheduling standpoint then, so if I caught what you're saying, you are hopeful that we might be able to make some minor adjustments for next school year, and then the larger piece would need to be woven into the bargaining negotiating process.
Yes, and there could be, out of the middle school, one of the things I heard mentioned was frustration of children who need help with foreign language. There's an EI block that's a prevention piece, but they often are also the same kid who needs help in their math or needs help in a core area. And so having access to those teachers, it could be where you're looking at something like a zero period. But we don't have that built in right now. We haven't really applied for some of those pieces and parts. And so that's a piece of how do I get kids to connect with the teachers they need at a more flexible time. We are hearing, how do we get more student contact time in a meaningful block? But if you look at some other districts, they do have an A week and a B week. We've never really done that. We've experimented with some models, but those are the kind of things we want our teachers to look at and say, say we can't do something like that. Would it answer your PLC question? Would it give you some of these flexibility pieces? We've got to get away from thinking of like Carnegie seat time. We've got to move towards meaningful learning time, and that is a shift because it also shifts parent expectation. But that's the meaningful piece we have to get to, but unfortunately we have faced some distractions that have come to us from the state. But I think Scott has aggressively within the committee kept saying, let's not talk about where we are in terms of the problem here. Let's think about what we could be doing and what elements we would need to adjust or change. I mean, there's been an encouragement to really think outside. And that's refreshing. We really haven't had that kind of visionary approach. It's been very reactionary in the past. That is different from this year. I think everybody is hearing that visionary piece.
I think in the process, you know, it starts small. You know, the calendar. I mean, come on, it's the calendar. We ought to be in. But the calendar is important because of the professional development that's in there. The professional development in the calendar and the timing of that is coordinated with the needs of the teachers based on the needs of our students. And so a calendar that we may in our own life say, okay, we're going to do this, and this, and let's go, isn't that easy when you have so many, and I'm certainly not trying to be disrespectful, or you get the concept. Then you move into these other pieces that we have right now where we're actually building a relationship and we're building a trust and a collaboration about some of these other issues that we've talked about. I mean, teachers designing their media specialist job descriptions, people who are involved in how we're going to do that, specialists involved in how we're going to deploy curriculum in classroom and instructional things in classrooms, working with Dr. Kalibek and others with professional development needs, pulling John Schenker and having all those people at tables together. Now we begin to do, we've used the term low-hanging fruit. I'm not suggesting that anything we talk about tonight is not important, but it is not a conversion of an entire schedule. It is a step in the process of more people coming to the table now saying, you know what, we asked for this and we got it. We asked for that and we tweaked it. We've done some MOU stuff and we're able to design our professional development within our PLCs. There's more flexibility and people are more encouraged by that and are more us additional things that we could be doing. Now we want to do something that's really significant, and that trust exists where the carpet's not going to get pulled out, where we've had a voice in the past, where there's real commitment back and forth, not only from us, from this body. That's a significant, you know, link in the chain. And when in this environment our staff hears, yes, we're going to add a specialist in media. Yes, we're going to move forward with one-on-one. Yes, we're committed to our strategic vision and we're not going to get real white knuckle. No, we're not spending money frivolously. No, we're not just putting things in place and adding more dollars. They see that. They appreciate that. They respect that. And we're trying to develop synergy right now. That's what this process is about. And I'm hopeful that that synergy and that positive attitude in a very negative environment takes its way into the negotiation process, where people are better educated about certain things than they've been in the past because of the work that we're doing. Where people feel like, well, maybe we could do our PLCs that way if we're going to. And so that's some of the stuff along the way that we're building, and that's taking a bite of the apple at a time, not trying to do the whole thing at once. That's the process.
It's good work.
That's good, man.
When Scott came over here, he had a vision. He had two careers. There were a lot of things that you said that we at the time did not have in place. And I've watched this vision unfold, and I've watched the board come on board with these pieces and components. And the beauty of what I've seen with the teachers is that they are feeling like they can share with them vulnerable without feeling like it's negative against them. When we brought in the math piece and said, here is a math leader to walk you through how to do all of these new standards, teachers, they had limited time, and what Colleen was able to do was to facilitate the process, to streamline it for them. They don't have to figure out all the nuances. She comes and she says, here are your choices and what are your decisions and why. And having that kind of hands-on support answered a stress that was being identified. If you can manage more effectively some of these components, it does free up that within your day you're doing things with kids and you're not having to pull out as much. And so I have come on board for some of these non-traditional, what we used to have administrators handle, but now teacher leaders, I've come on board for value within that. And that's hard for me because I'm frugal by nature. And so when you add an FTE, I'm seeing dollar signs. But the trade-off that I saw, especially with that math integration component, it was outstanding. And I know that you guys, your last work session, you had a discussion about the language arts. And, you know, in my fantasy world, I would have somewhere that support coming in place because I'm one of those people on social studies. I believe that STEM occurs best when kids write effectively with strong communication skills and they can read. And that's the bulk of our language arts program. And so I was with Scott as this stuff was percolating, and now where I'm seeing some of these components, why do the teachers want more collaborative time? Well, because they have all of these demands placed upon them. How can we best help them to do it? What methods? It's not a pull out for a half day, that's missed instructional time. How can we do this better? And so that's my hope, is that we can come back to you and have things to share to help you understand what we need, or what needs to shift so that we can do things better. So I thank you very much.
Thank you. Sounds like there's a lot of progress being made. I know there's a lot of effort, and I know that perhaps we're undoing some things that have happened over a longer period of time. I think it was Colin Powell that said, if you ever wait for 100% information, you'll never get anything done. if you get 75 or 80, you better make your decision and go right now. Because the curve is going the wrong way on you if you wait for it. The state is always going to throw another curveball at you. Something else is going to happen. The next thing is going to happen. If you wait for nothing to happen, well, nothing will happen. We've got two large motivating factors going on. One is promoting education and excellence for our students, and the other is finances. The state could be throwing a curveball at us. We see things like transportation and scheduling as an insurance, as opportunities to put more water in that one pitcher we got. When it comes to budget, our budget, we can only empty the pitcher. We can put in as many glasses as you want, but we only have so much water. If we can put more water in the pitcher because we got savings out of insurance or we got savings out of transportation, that's a good thing. We can't wait. We got to move fast. Faster. Faster than is comfortable. Yeah, and on the education, the scheduling side as well. I think most folks know, especially the younger attendees know, that high school students really don't do that great at 7:15 in the morning. You know?
To get them to my class by 7:15. 7:20.
So as we go through these things, speed is important. And I know it's not flicking a light switch, but speed is important. Consider something I'm not considering today, I'll consider it. So our mission is to present the options with the financial incentives and let people play their cards.
I think that's the direction we can definitely go.
And that concludes our 13th.
I'm sorry.
B and C. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
6 in your packet is related to a individual student. What I want to bring to the board's attention tonight is I want to thank Dr. Simpson. She has spent a tremendous amount of time with this particular family to develop what we believe is in the best interest of the student. What used to be a multi-year contract or agreement, probably better stated, with this particular family has turned out to be a single-year agreement, which I think is better for the student. It's better for the school district. This particular agreement, with its specifics for the child, turns out to be nearly a $7,000 savings for the school. So Dr. Simpson, once again, has worked diligently, providing great service, and doing it at the most economical cost for education. That's item 6. Item 7 and item 8, these are long-standing negotiations that have been going on with these two particular students, and this has been a difficult case. It has moved to our insurance program where the deductible fee of $5,000 is the board's total cost. You can see the related items and additional items involved. That price is the situation for the Board of Education. The original document is about a $19,000 per student cost, and because of the work that Dr. Simpson has done again, we don't like to get to situational things for breaking down with families, but in this case, we've been able to make the best out of what we think was a difficult situation and do that at the cost of the Board of Education that we think is reasonably appropriate.
Dr. Essay, the extended school year, do we pay for other students? Like an app?
It's part of their IEP, and we look at data to see if they have depression and lack of recruitment in a reasonable time over a break, like summer. We also track data on winter break, spring break, or if the nature of the disability they would need programming for maintenance of various skills. It's an IEP team decision typically.
Is there a large amount that have that in their IEP?
It depends. It depends on the year. And it depends on how the data looks.
Yeah.
What's difficult about it is it has to be determined every year. But sometimes if a student's eligible one year, even if the data doesn't support it the next, that's where sometimes then the IEP team doesn't always agree.
Okay. But you have to have data to prove it.
Yes.
Because
we use a form with specific questions that are right out of the procedural safeguard. And I go over that with all the administrators that have those meetings in the spring. And what the teams do is they fill out those questions using that data to support it, and then as a collective group, they decide if they meet the criteria. And then we look at, are they eligible for services, meaning X amount of hours of academic tutoring or speech and language or physical therapy or occupational therapy, or do they need something that's more program-based, like maybe sensational day camp specific or fit club that might be specific to social interaction. But what we're trying to do is streamline that so that we use the same system at all the meetings, and if they're eligible, then we pick from not a limited menu, but it's a little bit more of a controlled menu so that we can, number one, better ensure that we're getting the data from those programs to see if they were effective, but also easier to manage, for lack of a better term, because if they just are going all these different places. Yeah.
From a data standpoint, right. It was a smorgasbord before, so.
Right. And then, honestly, we still have a ways to go to get that consistency and people understanding that that's the procedure, but I think just the one year doing the review.
Okay.
But thanks.
Anything else?
Mrs. Bernard.
Yes.
Mr. Dosen.
Yes.
Mrs. Mack.
Yes.
Mr. Zuber.
Yes.
Mr. Jensen.
Yes. Resolution passes 5-0. Item K, committee reports. Financial liaison audit.
I would just mention that the audit report was officially released this afternoon. I received an email from the Auditor State's office, so it concluded, as you know, very well. And all funds are there and accounted for, and we
receive.
Good job, Rick.
Thank you, Rick. Thanks, Amy.
I didn't.
You were able to.
Yeah. I was just going to say, confirm what we already did. Awesome job for us. So.
Thank you. Permanent Improvement Committee. Do we have anything new and different? Just the EUS continues to move forward.
EUS, we have some bids coming in on the turf for the school, for the synthetic field, and we also have the process is coming to a conclusion on the HVAC for this office.
Okay.
And all that information will be provided to the Board of Education for the March meeting.
Great. Transportation appeals in this lovely weather.
We have no appeals. I can say that we've been working with both layers. There are circumstances in both communities where snow is much taller than the children who are waiting here. And we try to move stops to best accommodate the kids at that time. The other thing at this time of year is, well, in this particular year, because there is so much snow, there are very few sidewalk options for kids.
Yeah.
So they're finding themselves in streets pointing towards the bus stop. That's a little unsettling. And we're doing the best we can with parents and both of our mayors to address those issues as best we can.
Board policy, you haven't done anything about us, have you? Okay, we haven't done anything on policy recently.
So we're bringing more policy to the board and involved with the things we talked about this evening, and we also received another NEOLA update, so it won't be too much longer aware that the committee will receive a benefit from the year at least.
CBCC.
We are preparing for our upcoming negotiations. We're going to be interviewing for law firms, just investigating whether that's a change we want to make or not. Debbie and I attended the Mohican Summit on Negotiation, which we found very enlightening, and Mr. Peppel was there and some other really great speakers, Chuck Parsons, and just a lot of good conversations, and it's always interesting to hear other districts' point of view. That's usually the most interesting part.
Can I interject, too?
Absolutely.
I mean, really, I really felt it was a very, for the most part, very balanced presentation. I mean, they really tried to look at, you know, what both sides come into negotiations. But I think the biggest big picture idea that came out of it was the importance of creating the relationships and the trust. And as I was listening to you and Bonnie give that report, it just made me really happy that I'm on this happening here.
It was, and we got to the superintendent of Strongsville.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was there, and who was the other one? The superintendent who had gone on strike. Superintendent of Strongsville and the other one.
Oh, they didn't. I think it was Buckeye. I want to say it was Buckeye, but they didn't actually go on strike.
Oh, Reynoldsburg.
Somebody from Reynoldsburg.
Both superintendents spoke, and it was just, I don't know, the Strongsville especially, if you hear him speak, I hope you do get a chance to hear him speak, because the things that he, you know, hearing it from him and just how the community still has not recovered and the difficulty and, you know, just from a media standpoint that they've encountered with people who watch the TV, it's just heartbreaking, and it really reminds you how important it is for us to do our work to, you know, make sure that things don't come to that. And so, I don't know. But I was happy to hear him for the price of the ticket. That was really, that was important, you know, in Reynoldsburg also. He wasn't there, but the lawyer who refereed,
yeah, was talked about it. It was
there.
Yeah.
So that was,
we also, Mrs. Mack, through conversation with yourself, Dr. Roebuck and myself, we were able to pass all some information. It was part of the process to select.
Oh, absolutely.
In our district, so that
Scott was very, very helpful for CBCC with the questions. I found myself calling Dave Tryon, actually. But the questions that we had, because the other board members at CBCC liked the process that we used, and so Scott gave Dr. Roebuck those questions, and we're following a similar process, and I really feel thankful, you know, that I had gone through that and can provide that leadership, and we'll see see how that goes, and we're also investigating general counsel, looking at that also, as well as negotiations. RamTech, the opening is March 30th. It's a luncheon, and anyone's invited, and that's the actual groundbreaking. And anyone's invited. In fact, I'll get you an invitation and make sure you're invited to that. But it's just an exciting time, you know, with RamTech, and I know Dr. Ludlick's working hard to get a lot of other partnerships. And I think that's it.
STEM committee.
No, something's coming to mind. Yeah, Kathy Roderick. No, I mean you've seen the Facebook pages that have been sending out, but she's been working to roll something, a program out that they haven't held into all the districts. So she's been doing a fabulous job with that, and a lot of competitions. You know. Incorporating robotics. That's
amazing. With the beach ball coming up on March 14th.
I just said that. Yes. And our superintendent came up with a lovely game that I hope you all participate in, Deal or No Deal. And he did a wonderful presentation,
we'll
so I can't. Yeah, somebody will be behind the curtain, and it's an exciting.
Superintendent for a day, I may be doing it someplace else as a result of trying to be a full city.
Figuring out the percentages of the hairy part.
March, members of the board, I'd like to ask if you would be all right if we move the meeting to the high school, not the date, just the meeting, because I think that the next meeting we're going to have several athletes and several other individuals who have been competing at the state level. In the meeting, and I don't think this room is going to be large enough because we will have wrestlers. Hopefully, we will be recognizing the gymnastics team again. We have swimmers, we have robotics, we've got a lot of kids who have done great work over the winter season, and they'll be in this room, and their parents will be here, so we will need additional spaces, which is a great thing. It's a great problem.
Did you hear, too, you didn't mention, just because a friend of mine has a child on the team, the sixth grade boys just came in second in the state championship yesterday, I think.
We don't have a sixth grade basketball.
We only have the
eighth. Yeah.
Oh, it's sixth, seventh, and eighth.
It's it's B's, like local, like ETA.
Well,
they were really excited.
Their coach was selected as coach of the year in his own home.
Okay, never mind. Sorry.
Thank you. No. Hey, you know, the golden, we have a winner. I don't know if you saw this, the golden key. I saw you put that.
Yes.
Yeah, will that be selected for somebody who's going to compete in New York?
We have five students whose artwork was forwarded on to New York, and that will be judged this month. And I have their, well, I posted it, you're right. So
we could invite those winners also.
Oh, yeah. Cheryl and I already talked about it.
Let's make it all good news. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's so much. The presidential winners won't be selected by that time, will they? For the SAT, ACT, we had
National Merit.
Yeah, the president, something about
The Presidential Scholar.
There you go, the Presidential Scholar Award. We won't know in March.
I don't think so. Not that early.
But we had how many, which is so impressive. We had, comparatively speaking, we were holding our own amongst everybody.
Yes.
We had four or five.
I really don't want to. We had a nice
amount of students when you saw all the schools.
Awesome.
We're up there. We're contented with all the
days. And hopefully we get good news from our academic challenge team.
You had to sign a form.
maybe in the future we should.
Go to like a sport.
It'd be like, telling the seasons and all that scandal or something.
Let's do it. The same thing with the robotics thing.
All right, any other board member reports? Let's move on to item L. We have a vote, resolution to go into executive session to consider the appointment, employment, or compensation of a public employee as per board policy 0166, item A, and for discussion with the board's legal counsel of disputes involving the board that are subject to pending or imminent court action as per board policy 0166, item D. May I have a motion, please?
So moved.
We keep doing it. No, I can't do it.
Roll call, please.
Mrs. Brown.
Yes.
Mr. Dosen.
Yes.
Mrs. Mack.
Yes.
Mr. Ziegler.
Yes.
Mr. Jensen.
Yes. We'll be in executive session. Thanks very much for attending.
Thank you.
We'll have no further official business following the exact session.